ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 1 चैप्टर 7 टेक्स्ट 5 Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Yaya samohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam paropi manute nartam tatkritam chabhipadyate. Translation. Due to this external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks of himself as a material product and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. I'll read that again because it's a lot to catch. There's a lot packed in there. So you have to hear with all your ears. Well, you only have two ears, but pay attention, that's the point. Due to this external energy, obviously this is a verse which is continuing. Due to this external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks of himself as a material product and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. Purport. And again, please pay attention because it's packed. Every word is, every line is packed with significance. Purport. The root cause of suffering by the materialistic living beings is pointed out with remedial measures which are to be undertaken and also the ultimate perfection to be gained. All this is mentioned in this particular verse. That's a lot. The root cause of suffering by the materialistic living beings is pointed out with remedial measures which are to be undertaken and also the ultimate perfection to be gained. All this is mentioned in this particular verse. That's everything. That's the whole philosophy summarized. Everything we need to know. Okay, I'll read on more. The living being is by constitution transcendental to material encagement. But he is now imprisoned by the external energy and therefore he thinks himself one of the material products. And due to this unholy contact, the pure spiritual entity suffers material miseries under the modes of material nature. And the living entity misunderstands himself to be a material product. So, the first line of the purport, which summarizes the verse, is now being unpacked by Srila Prabhupada. It means explained. Explained in more detail. The living entity misunderstands himself to be a material product. This means that the present perverted way of thinking, feeling, and willing under material conditions is not natural for him, but he has his normal way of thinking, feeling, and willing. The living being in his original state is not without thinking, willing, and feeling power. It is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that the actual knowledge of the conditioned soul is now covered by nescience. Thus, the theory that a living being is absolute impersonal Brahman is refuted herein. Just see how much the Acharya is confined in the verse, in one verse. This cannot be because the living entity has his own way of thinking in his original unconditional state also. The present conditional state is due to the influence of the external energy, which means that the illusory energy takes the initiative while the Supreme Lord is aloof. The Lord does not desire that a living being be illusioned by external energy. The external energy is aware of this fact, but still she accepts a thankless task of keeping the forgotten soul under illusion by her bewildering influence. The Lord does not interfere with the task of the illusory energy because such performances of the illusory energy are also necessary for the reformation of the conditioned soul. An affectionate father does not like his children to be chastised by another agent, yet he puts his disobedient children under the custody of a severe man just to bring them to order. But the all-affectionate Almighty Father at the same time desires relief for the conditioned soul, relief from the clutches of the illusory energy. The king puts the disobedient citizens within the walls of the jail. Ding. But sometimes the king, desiring the prisoner's relief, personally goes there and pleads for reformation, and on his doing so, the prisoners are set free. Similarly, the Supreme Lord descends from his kingdom upon the kingdom of illusory energy and personally gives relief in the form of the Bhagavad Gita, wherein he personally suggests that although the ways of illusory energy are very stiff to overcome, one who surrenders under the lotus feet of the Lord is set free by the order of the Supreme. This surrendering process is the remedial measure for getting relief from the bewildering ways of the illusory energy. The surrendering process is completed by the influence of association. The Lord has suggested, therefore, that by the influence of the speeches of saintly persons who have actually realized the Supreme, men are engaged in his transcendental loving service. The conditioned soul gets a taste for hearing about the Lord, and by such hearing only he is gradually elevated to the platform of respect, devotion, and attachment for the Lord. Here Srila Prabhupada is paraphrasing the famous Satam Prasangam Mamavirya Samvidaha verse, which the last line is Shraddha Ratir Bhaktir Anukramishati, respect, devotion, and attachment for the Lord. The whole thing is completed by the surrendering process. So, we can see how Srila Prabhupada in his purports, he brings together all different points from different statements of Shastra and gives them in a narrative. Herein also the same suggestion is made by the Lord in his incarnation of Vyasadeva. This means that the conditioned souls are being reclaimed by the Lord both ways, namely by the process of punishment by the external energy of the Lord and by himself as the spiritual master within and without. Within the heart of every living being, the Lord himself as the Supersoul, Paramatma, becomes the spiritual master. And from without, he becomes the spiritual master in the shape of scriptures, saints, and the initiator spiritual master. This is still more explicitly explained in the next shloka. Personal superintendence of the illusory energy is confirmed in the Vedas, the Kena Upanishad, in relation to the demigod's controlling power. Herein also it is clearly stated that the living entity is controlled by the external energy in a personal capacity. The living being thus subject to the control of external energy is differently situated. It is clear, however, from the present statement of Bhagavatam that the same external energy is situated in the inferior position before the personality of Godhead or the perfect being. The perfect being or the Lord cannot be approached even by the illusory energy, who can only work on the living entities. Therefore, it is sheer imagination that the Supreme Lord is illusioned by the illusory energy and thus becomes a living being. If the living being and the Lord were in the same category, then it would have been quite possible for Vyasadeva to see it, and there would have been no question of material distress on the part of the illusion being, for the Supreme Being is fully cognizant. So there are so many unscrupulous imaginations on the part of the monists to endeavor to get both the Lord and the living being in the same category. Had the Lord and the living beings been the same, then Srila Shukadeva Goswami would not have taken the trouble to describe the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, for they would all be manifestations of illusory energy. Srimad Bhagavatam is the summum bonum, the remedy for suffering humanity in the clutches of Maya. Srila Vyasadeva, therefore, first of all, diagnosed the actual disease of the conditioned souls, that is, their being illusioned by the external energy.
He also saw the perfect supreme being from whom the illusory energy is far removed, though he saw both the diseased conditioned souls and also the cause of the disease. And the remedial measures are suggested in the next verse. Both the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living beings are undoubtedly qualitatively one, but the Lord is the controller of the illusory energy, whereas the living entity is controlled by the illusory energy. Thus the Lord and the living beings are simultaneously one and different. Another point is distinct herein, that eternal relation between the Lord and the living being is transcendental. Otherwise, the Lord would not have taken the trouble to reclaim the conditioned souls from the clutches of Maya. In the same way, the living entity is also required to revive his natural love and affection for the Lord, and that is the highest perfection of the living entity. Srimad Bhagavan treats the conditioned soul with an aim to that goal of life. Yaya samohito jiva atmanam tri gunatmakam. Due to this external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks of himself as a material product and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. I chose to speak on this verse because it is, if we consider Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam together, this is the first occurrence therein of the word anartha, which is a very important word. It means that which is not an artha. It is a negative term. Artha means that which is meaningful, meaning. There are various meanings of the word artha, but in this word anartha, as generally used in Vaishnava understanding, it means that which is meaningless or an obstruction to our real goal of life. Everything in this world is an anartha. Everything that we think of as meaningful is product of the illusory conception of ourselves being the enjoyers of this world. So what is our artha, our goal? That's another. The goal of it, another meaning of the word artha. What is our goal? The goal of a devotee is to come out of the anarthas, of which are all stem from considering oneself an enjoyer of the material world, and come to our artha, to come to our real meaningful life, which is service to Krishna, or sometimes this is called attainment of Krishna prema, or more accurately, reawakening our dormant natural love for Krishna. So anarthas, they may be various tendencies, kankrodha, lobha, moha, mada, matsarya, well known, lust, greed, anger, illusion, pride and envy, these are well known tendencies of the conditioned souls. Well known means in Indian religious culture, Hindu culture, for want of a better term, these terms are at least fairly well known, at least until recently. Anarthas may also take a more tangible form, such as alcoholism or addiction to various other unwholesome substances. It may take the form of various manias, kleptomania. What is that? There are all kinds of. Can anyone think? Psychomania.
heard of it. I don't know what it means. But what does that mean? Anyone know what it means? I've heard the term. Anyway, these are all kinds of people get a fixation on something, which is, even from the material point of view, not in our self-interest. From the devotional point of view, anything not connected with Krishna or for the pleasure of Krishna is an anartha. So the tendency to watch TV, to watch the Olympic Games. I'm in the places I'm going to, I'm congratulating all the devotees for coming to hear something about Krishna, because they could be watching the Olympic Games, which is probably going on right now. Is it? Or must be? I don't know. I'm just thinking of the time. Maybe it's they have night games. I don't know. I really don't know. But anyway, it's just an example of anartha. I heard that in South America, during the World Cup soccer, everything just closes down. The whole country's practically stopped functioning during the soccer matches. And temples also. The ISKCON temples. It's a real addiction. So that's another kind of anartha. There are various anarthas, and they block the path to Krishna prema, the reattainment of Krishna prema. That is specifically mentioned by Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in which he gives an overview of the process of reattaining Krishna prema. So that process is, listen carefully, ādo śraddhā tathā sādhu saṅga atā bhajana kriya tato nārtha nivṛtti. That's anārtha nivṛtti. Tato niṣṭhā ruchis tathā atā saktis tato bhāva atā prema abhyudanshati sādhā kāna mayaṁ prema nāb pradur bhave bhavet kramaha. So this, the last line, in English you can put it at the beginning. This is the gradual process, step by step, of reviving Krishna prema, which is dormant in the heart. Begins with faith, adoshada, then we associate with devotees, then we undertake the practices of devotional service, and then comes the stage of anartha nivritti, which means to become free, to become free from, to retire from, nivritta in modern Hindi and probably other Indian languages means to retire, nivritta. We are someone, an elderly man, are you nivritta, means retired. So to retire from anarthas, to give them up. And then there are other stages. Then we become fixed, we have taste, we have attachment to devotional service, and then ecstatic feelings arise, and then there's pure devotional service, love of Krishna. Anartha nivritti is required for artha pravritti, for cultivating and entering into that which is really meaningful. But this anartha nivritti can seem to be a stumbling block. How to get beyond this? How to get beyond these attachments? For various tendencies, attachments, habits that may be very deep-rooted in our consciousness. We have various impressions in the mind by which we tend to think in certain ways. We tend to have various attachments, even after practicing Krishna consciousness for some time. Therefore, devotees often ask that, well, I want to be free from all these things so I can have love of Krishna.
but it seems very difficult to do so. As Srila Prabhupada points out twice in this purport, the process for getting free from anarthas is described in the next verse. And the next verse begins with the word anartha. Anartha pashamang sakshad bhakti yoga madhokshaje. Lokasya janato vidvangs chakre sakvata samhitam. This series of verses is actually describing the necessity and the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, in the next verse it says, one can get relief from anarthas. Anartha upashamam, sakshat. One can directly get relief from the anarthas by bhakti yoga to adhokshaja. Adhokshaja means Krishna, the Supreme Lord. The word adhokshaja in this context reinforces the point that Krishna is beyond the material energy. Yayasamo hito jiva atmanam triguna trigunatmakam paropi manate narcham. So this material energy is material. It's composed of the three modes of material nature. The word adhokshaja means he who is beyond the purview of the material senses. So by devotional bhakti yoga, the linking process, actually Srila Prabhupada's translation is also divinely inspired, of course. The material miseries of the living entity which are superfluous to him. Superfluous. So, Srila Prabhupada has the word anartha. Srila Prabhupada phrases it in this way. The material miseries of the living entity which are superfluous to him. So, captures so much. Can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. Linking process here means the word yoga, devotional service, bhakti. But the mass of people do not know this, and therefore the learned Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relation to the supreme truth. So this is all, this whole section is to describe the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. So anarthas, how can we get free from them? Often devotees ask me, well, how can we get free from these anarthas, or how can I this, or similar kind of questions to about how can I advance in devotional service. And generally I always say the same thing. Well, there are two answers. One thing is, if you see a particular fault in yourself, try to associate with those devotees who you see have overcome or largely overcome that fault. Another thing is, just go on with devotional service. It's not that there's, yeah, I'm trying in devotional service, but I have all these things in my heart. What do I do? As if you have to do something else. And I'm doing hearing and chanting and serving, but it doesn't seem to be working. Maybe I have to go to a yoga class or something. And that will help me to control my mind. But they don't teach controlling of the mind in yoga class. They only teach controlling of the breath and the body. Or maybe I have to get some special blessings. Well, special blessings, that is for all of them. And often devotees, they come and say, I got all these things in my mind, as if they're the only one in the universe. They seem to think that it's only me. But they don't. Everyone is in Maya in this material world. Just in case you hadn't realized that. We're not the process of bhakti works, but we have to apply ourselves to it with enthusiasm, determination, and patience. And part of the process of devotional service is hearing, as will be stated in the verse, two verses after this. I just read the verse after this. And the verse after that describes how it works. And we're just going through this very quickly, because to analyze it all will take a lot more time than I have now. Yasyam vai shuyamananam krishne paramapuruse bhaktir utpadyate pumsat shokamoha bhayavaha. Simply by giving oral reception to this Vedic literature, the feeling for devotional service to Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sprouts up at once to extinguish the fire of lamentation, illusion, and fearfulness. So lamentation, illusion, and fearfulness, they are themselves anartas, and they are the products of all anartas. Whatever we may be attached to in this world produces a sense, ultimately, if not immediately, produces a sense of lamentation, fearfulness, and illusion. So by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we can be free from this. And it's not just a matter of sitting in the room and listening, but one has to apply one's mind to it also. So his Bhagavatam gives us information by which we can, psychological information, if you like, about how we can overcome all the anartas. Tachinvan supatam vicharana paro vimuchyan naraha. In Srimad Bhagavatam itself, it describes that we should hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, tat shrinvan, supatan, study, read it and recite it very carefully, vicharana paraha, applying our intelligence, trying to understand it. And if one does so, we can be fully liberated. That means we can be liberated from all the anartas, which means that we can come to the position of artha or paramartha. This word paramartha is a synonym for spiritual. Artha is a general word which means what we need, and paramartha means our supreme need. So those of you who know Hindi, you all know the word paramartha. It's often used as a simile for adhyatmik or adhyatma, like that. So our paramartha, which is to attain Krishna, means to become free of anartas. So we have to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, and Srimad Bhagavatam will teach us that our real artha is to love Krishna. We can approach Krishna for some material artha, for some material mean, and most people who approach Krishna do so. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that out of the four kinds of people who approach Krishna, one of them is artharthi, which means that they want money. Artha, another meaning of artha, is money. So devotees want to become anartha nivritta. There's another word, nirartha, which means meaningless or without money. So people come to Krishna, they want money, but if they associate with pure devotees and hear the message of Bhagavatam, they'll come to realize that what they consider to be meaningful, money, has no intrinsic value in itself. Then they become devotees of Krishna when they realize that what we considered to be valuable, money is of no actual value. And Krishna himself says that what's that verse? Yasyaham anugrahnami harishye taddanam shanai titon. What is that? How does that verse go? Tito nartha. Tado dhanam tyajyantyartha swajana dukha dukitam. Yeah. Did you learn that verse, or you just looked it up quickly in your smartphone?
No, I know that.
Good. Oh, yeah, you told me the other day.
So Krishna says, to one who I show my mercy, I take away their money gradually. Oh, oh, they don't preach that verse. No one will want to join our movement. Forbidden verses. Then, tato dhanam cha jantyasya. So, yeah. Then, when his friends find he's got no money, they're not friendly to him anymore. And he becomes very sorry. Well, that's not the end of the story. Then if he's pious, then he becomes artharti, approaching Krishna. So, everything I wanted to speak on, I didn't even start on that yet. Anyway, what are these anartas? In our devotional service, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, great Vaishnava Acharya, he has commented on this. The Acharyas, they act as representatives of Vyasadeva, because even though Vyasadeva gave the Vedic literature, which describes everything that we need to know, but the Acharyas who are representatives of him, who are considered non-different from him, they explain the subject matter further for our understanding. So what are different kinds of anartas that devotees face? We should consider this, because we're here because we want to attain Krishna Prema. What's standing in the way? Anartas, or that which we are attached to, which we shouldn't be attached to, because as long as we're attached to, we can't be attached to Krishna. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur puts it, kam krodh lobh moha madadi avishta eshabna chare kishe pabe ratha Krishna. As long as we are absorbed in lust, greed, anger, and so on, how are we going to attain Radha Krishna? The answer is obvious. It's not possible. So, what are these anartas? Now, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, as I said, we'll become purified, but it's not just a matter of sitting and hearing, but we should consider it also, because it gives us direct information about these anartas and the acharyas, about the anartas, the process of devotional service, how to execute it. We see in the case of Bharat Maharaj, he was practically completely perfect, but still he fell from that position. So how careful we have to be in devotional service. He left all the anartas of his home, family, kingdom, pride, prestige, everything. He left everything simply to worship Krishna. I suggest putting some oil on that door. Someone could take that up as a service. But even in that condition, when he was highly advanced, he fell victim to a silly anartha, which he shouldn't have done, but he did. So how careful we have to be. What are the kinds of anarthas there are? Vishnu Chakravarti summarizes. It may be that due to bad previous sinful activities can influence us in such in various ways. One way is that we may be poverty stricken and we're just in anxiety about getting money or to live or to support our family. That can be one kind of anartha. It's very common nowadays, actually more in India than in America, that people are just working, 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 working. It's very normal in India, as many of you from India, you know, to work 14 hours a day, 6 days or 7 days a week. And people, even if they want to perform devotional service, they don't have the time, because to perform even
even the minimal sadhana that Srila Prabhupada gave for all his disciples is going to be minimally 7 hours a day. If you take the morning program, evening program, japa, and all, people don't have time, because many of our, even our initiated devotees, they regularly chant their rounds crammed up in a train or a bus. It's not really a very, and the class, they don't sit, they don't have time to sit. And even when they do have time, they fall asleep because they're so tired. And because they don't regularly cultivate the hearing message of Bhagavatam, then it's tough for them, it's difficult for them. So then they just like to hear some stories. It really requires time. But if we don't have the regular food and shelter and all, and if we're always in anxiety about that, then so bad karma can be an obstacle in coming to, in practicing devotional service. Another kind of anarchy arises from good karma. How about that? Say, okay, so I won't do bad, I'll do good karma, so in my next life I'll get a good opportunity. But it doesn't work like that either, because any kind of karma is an anartha, any kind of materialistic work. We think, well, I'm so comfortable, what do I need to do bhakti for? That's for those people who want money, right? That's what you just said, well, I have enough money. What do I need to do bhakti for? It's just for those funny people, you know, useless people, right? They got too much stress and anxiety and their wife ran away and, you know, what do you expect? I'm okay, I have no problem. My wife ran away too, but now I have two or three in the side. So, you know, what's the problem? So if one is very comfortable or feeling complacent in one's position, that can also be an obstacle. So a little material distress. Srila Prabhupada writes in this purport, he talks about the miseries of material life, that he compares that to that Bhagavan has his external energy punish the conditioned souls, just like a father may give his children, his unruly, disobedient children, to be under a severe man to punish them. And the illusory energy works like that as a service to Krishna. And in the modern age, we have the idea that you should always be nice to people. Don't say anything they don't like. Always be nice all the time. But this isn't Krishna's plan. Krishna's plan is that no one should suffer in this material world. But when we come here, Krishna has remedial measures. One remedial measure is punishing the conditioned souls. But when one gets some apparent relief from that by being comfortable in material life, then one may think, well, he doesn't feel a need for it. So suffering can be good also. As I often say to people, kind of say, oh, this went wrong. That's good. Krishna's giving his mercy to you. No, I came to get some mercy so I can get free from this suffering. Okay, but they think getting free from the suffering means I lost all my money. Swamiji, give a blessing so I get my money back. No, that's Krishna's mercy. No, that's so you can chant Hare Krishna and realize that this is all nonsense anyway. Another kind of anartha is when we're performing devotional service, when one is performing devotional service seriously, other devotees may start to notice that, or even non-devotees in a pious culture may notice that and respect you. And then you start to think, oh, now I became important. You can become... If you become humble, people will notice that and respect you, and then you become puffed up. Maya catches you like this. It can happen. In fact, it can be a common tendency, to the extent that the acharyas warn us about that. And actually, in a civilized culture, people should respect sadhus. It's good for them. They should do. They should look up to them. But if the sadhu becomes desirous of that, or takes pleasure in that, and starts to think, I deserve this, and starts to think, well, other people, they're not offering me respect, what's wrong with them? Then he's in trouble. Actually, in some cases, a sadhu may instruct others to give respect for their benefit. They should learn this culture for their benefit. But if he thinks, I deserve to be served, I deserve to be respected, then that's another kind of anartha, when he fails or stops to see that the respect is being offered. If he doesn't think that actually I'm not fit for this, but my guru has delivered me from hellish life, and actually these people are offering respect, actually that respect is due to my guru, because I'm not at all respectable myself. So this, by doing so, they're glorifying my guru who saved me. So, but if we think that I am big, I am important, that's another kind of anartha. Another kind of anartha is Vaishnava aparad, any kind of aparad or offense blocks our advancement in devotional service, and especially Vaishnava aparad is very dangerous. The tendency to unnecessarily defame Vaishnavas, or to be envious of them. If one thinks that, well, I'm a great devotee and people are praising, but they're praising someone else more than me. Oh no, that's not good. What's wrong with them? Or someone is doing more, someone is a more famous sadhu than me. Oh, that's not good. And we have to find something out. Chidra anvesan, looking for holes, looking for faults. We may even get some kind of taste in that we like to discuss. Oh, this person, everyone's praising, but look, you see, there's this fault and that fault and another fault. Look at this. He's not going to get Krishna's mercy. He doesn't deserve it. So that's another kind of anartha, which is very dangerous, because Krishna won't be pleased, and we're very strongly warned against that. Now, at the same time, one has to retain a sense of discrimination, because especially in this Kali Yuga, not only in Kali Yuga, but especially in Kali Yuga, it is a common phenomenon that people who are dressed as sadhus are not sadhus, or that they started off being good sadhus, but they became allured by the faith that people put in them and the respect that people had in them. They realized they had so much hold over them, and they could, the spirit to exploit them became prominent. So maybe, it's quite often we find in India, it comes in the news, some sadhu is exposed as being a womanizer. That happened last year, one in North India, big shot, and in South India, pretty big shot. Up-and-coming big shot. The other one was well-established for many years. And they're both exposed as womanizers. I suspect in both cases that they didn't start off like that. They didn't become a sadhu for the sake of womanizing. But when they found that they had so many adoring, pretty women, and they themselves didn't have that, they thought they were above that, and they became victims of Maya, and they fell down. That I suspect. And there may be others who are deliberately becoming sadhus just to cheat others, but not all of them. So we have to retain a sense of discrimination. But at the same time, we don't want to make offenses to Vaishnavas. And it's a very fine line. And if we err on either side, we're going to get into trouble. On the other side. I think in America we say on the other side. Is it? Is that how you say it in America? Err. Is that how you say it? Okay. All right. We're in trouble. If we make offenses, then we're in serious trouble. Or if someone who we respect as a spiritual leader is actually deviating from the path, and we follow that, then we're also in trouble. So we may want to err on the side of caution and not make offense. But to be blind to that which is to anarthas, that's also going to put us in a lot of trouble. So fine discrimination is required. Pure intent is required. Even if we notice that someone is, or we're pretty sure, according to the directions of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, that something is not correct, still, it's not that we should take pleasure in pointing that out. It's not that it is a sport for Vaishnavas to verbally shoot down others. We should be very careful. Bharat Maharaj, I just mentioned him. He was practically on the stage of pure love of God, not quite there, and he fell down again. Of course, he was at such an advanced stage, Kaunteya Patijanihi Name Bhakta Pranashati, that he, even though he fell down, really badly fell down, not into any gross sinful activity, but his high level of Krishna consciousness in a few days tumbled down to nothing. And he was Diya conscious. So it was a severe fall down. He lost his Krishna consciousness practically. But that was superficial. And because he was on a high level, then again, he took it up in another life, in the next life, and fully in the third in the series of lives. And that's true of any devotee who seriously practiced. They can continue. By Krishna's grace, they will pick it up again. But now is the time. If we think that, well, I'm doing bhakti, so, okay, I think I did enough for this lifetime, and time to start enjoying the world again, and I'll pick it up in the next life. Well, that's insincerity. That's a very severe offense to think like that. By such thinking, one's development in devotional service will be stunted for a long time. I just have to finish quickly. Anarthas, we have to be aware. What is it? What is standing in between us and Krishna praying? That is anartha, attachment to that which is not in our self-interest. Apaswartha parayana. This was a term that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati used. That we are attached to that which is detrimental to our real self-interest. What could be more mad than that? But that is the condition of everyone in this material world. Victim of the mind. We are a victim of our own mind. Which we might seem that, well, someone who's a drug addict or a mentally disturbed person, we could say victim of the mind, that applies to them, but actually everyone, even the so-called, even the people who are supposed to be balanced, normal, human, well-adjusted, that's the term. Even someone who's called well-adjusted, if one is well-adjusted in this material world, he is also insane. Because to want to adjust to a world where there is birth, death, old age, and disease is insane. To want to adjust to this world is stupid. So they're also victims of the mind. And another extension of that is to become the victim of the psychologist who tries to readjust you so you become well adjusted. These are all anarthas. Anyway, I'll finish there. It's a very, very big subject. But I'm just wanted to bring that to the attention of the, as we see in the description of the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam at the beginning of this seventh chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto. The glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam is described in terms of overcoming anarthas so that one can become Krishna conscious. Hare Krishna. I'll finish with this short overview of anarthas that we should be conscious of. Very brief overview. For a more thorough study, read the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. The whole topic of Srimad Bhagavatam we can describe in various ways. One way we can summarize all the topics of Bhagavatam is anartha artha vicha, consideration of that which is unmeaningful or against our real interest, and consideration of that which is in our real interest. That's it. Instead of saying all the big long words in Sanskrit, you can just say it very quickly. Anartha artha vichar, or anarthartha. Artha anartha vichar, you could say. Vicharam, actually, in Sanskrit. So, Hare Krishna. We'll finish that and you can announce the books.
Yes, ma'am.
And meantime, I'm going to move on. And if they want the book signed, I'll sign them some other time. Hare Krishna.